Good morning. We'll try to focus today in the concluding shiur of the series on navigating Mamzeira's concerns. We alluded earlier in one of our previous shiurim to some of the issues that come up in potential Mamzeira's considerations, and we want to avoid as much as possible having someone actually end up with a status of a Mamzer. What is a Mamzer? Source number one, Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer Simen Dalis If Yud Gimel, Simen Dalis If Yud Gimel, Ezu Mamzer, Zehaba Mi'achav Kol Arayas, the product of a union involving one of the Arayas, one of the forbidden relationships, Bein B'chai B'misos, Bein B'chai B'krisos, whether that relationship is on pain of Misas Bezdin, whether it's on pain of Chiyav Kares. The most classic case, or the most common case, would be a case of Eishes Ish Shezinsa, a married woman who has a relationship with another man and has a child from that union. Assuming that that man is Jewish, as we noted in previous shiurim, the product of an Eved V'akamah Babas Yisrael in all circumstances is not a Mamzer, so even if you have a married Jewish woman who cohabits with a non-Jewish man, that does not create Mamzerah. So the concern is, if you have a married woman cohabiting with a Jewish man other than her husband, then, as we know, the consequence is very severe. Lo yavo Mamzer b'kal Hashem, a Mamzer cannot freely marry within the Jewish people. Now, there are two introductory comments that we have to make before exploring the details of how to avoid, as we wish to do, a potential stigmatism, if you will, of Mamzeris. Number one, an important Gemara in source number three, Kedushin Ayin Aleph Amar Aleph, the Gemara tells us, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Tzedakah Asa Kadosh Baruch Hu Mitzvah, Kadosh Baruch Hu did something nice for the Jews, Shemishpacha Shenitma Nitma. If you have a family in which there's a pesul, someone of questionable lineage who potentially has the possibility of mamzeris that gets mixed up in the population at large, and you can no longer identify that person, then it doesn't concern us. So what exactly the parameters of the statement are very unclear. There is a notion in halacha of mishpacha shenitma nitma. So if you're at a point generations down the road where there's a possibility maybe some generations earlier had a status of mamzeris, we don't know about it, it sounds like you don't have to be concerned. But the exact parameters of this are very unclear. Take a look at source number four. The way part of this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, Simen Beis, Se'if, Hei. When we discuss the problems, the pitfalls of a potential mamzer, that's where we have active knowledge about the situation. If you have a family that mixed into that family is a puzzle, the Eino Yadu L'Rabim, it is not commonly known. Kevan Shinitma Nitma, once that person is already mixed in, they're mixed in. And someone who knows about that status isn't authorized to reveal it. He should leave this woman who has this potential negative status with her cheskas kashrus. All families where they're already mixed together are going to be kasher in the future. Mikol makom, kasher adavar legalus is nuin. But if you do know about it, then you should reveal it to people who are more scrupulous. So again, the parameters of this are very unclear. Lemaisa, when do we say mishpacha kevin shenit manimba? But as we'll see, there's definitely an orientation that if information is not readily available, and we're some step removed, or time-wise, from the problematic relationship, maybe you don't have to investigate all that much. And the parameters of that, we'll try to touch on a little bit as we go on. The second important piece of information is a Gemara in Kedushin Ayin Gimel that tells us that on a Daraisa level, on a biblical level, the prohibition of a mamzer marrying freely within the Jewish people is only what the Gemara terms mamzer vadai, velo mamzer safek. Only if we know for a fact that this person is a mamzer, but not if he is a safek mamzer. Again, here as well, parameters are somewhat unclear, because the Gemara does say, even though that's true on a Daraisa level, nevertheless, midrabanan, mala asub yachsin, midrabanan, even a Suffolk mamzer may be prohibited. And what circumstances that is relevant to, again, is somewhat unclear and subject to machlokas. Just to note, in terms of the mechanics of the, in principle, mamzer vadai velo mamzer safek, what is the nature of this safek mamzer? So practically speaking, a safek mamzer, it could be on one level he's worse off, because at least the mamzer, we'll see, is allowed to marry a gioris potentially, he's allowed to marry another mamzeres, but it says in Shulchan Aruch, a safek mamzer can't marry a regular Jew, can't marry a real mamzer either, because we don't exactly know what he is. But on the theoretical Doraisa level of Suffolk Mamzer Mutter, what's the nature of that suffix? So Rav Schechter is fond of quoting a piece in Rabbi Chana. Rabbi Chana and Wasserman has this a few places in his writings, but it appears, for one, in Kovitz Aras Simen Nunches, Kovitz Aras Anyuvamas. Rabbi Chana notes that there's a Ran at the end of the first Perek of Kiddushin. The Ran there is discussing the concept of Suffolk Orla B'chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a daraisa din, pasuk in the Torah, that the produce of a fruit tree for the first 3 years you're not allowed to eat. That's called orla. Okay, orla in chutz laaretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, is asur midrabanan, only rabbinic. However, the Gemara says, because it's only rabbinic in nature, safek orla b'chutz laaretz mutter. That if you have a doubt, you don't know whether something is orla or not, it's permissible to eat that fruit. Safek orla b'chutz laaretz is mutter. So what's the nature of that suffix? The way the Ran explains it, that's a kind of suffix where if I don't have any active knowledge, I don't even have to be choshesh, I don't have to have any concern that maybe it really is orla. So in the extreme formulation, the way what emerges from Bilchanan quoting this Ran, is that even if I know for a fact that this fruit is orla in Chutz Laaretz, but you don't know one way or another, I can give it to you, and you're allowed to eat it. Don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask me any questions, and I don't have to tell you. So Rabbi Chanan, based on this Ran, says the same is true by Safek Mamzer. Safek Mamzer is like Safek Orla. It's not that I don't know one way or another, but I don't need to know. If I don't have any active, positive knowledge that this person is a Mamzer, then I don't have to be concerned, and I can even this person can marry freely. So even if in theory I know that this person is a mamzer, but he doesn't know, I can be misadar kedushin for him as long as he never finds out. Now, it's not a good idea, because maybe he will find out and then he's going to be in a lot worse trouble. But in theory, if he knows, if I know that there's no way he's going to find out and I'm the only one in the world who knows, then I could theoretically be misadar kedushin for such a person. That's kind of like the din that does appear in Shulchan Aruch by Avelis. If a person doesn't know that he's an Avel, he just lost a relative, so someone else could bring him to Chasana and have him do anything an Avel is asked to do. It might not be nice, he might not appreciate it, but in theory, what he doesn't know doesn't hurt him. So Rabbi Chanan thinks that Safek Mamzer, again, on a, in principle, the Raisa level, the practical ramifications are minimal, because it's hard to construct a case where I know, but no one else will ever find out. But in theory, that may be the nature of Suffolk Mamzer.
When you say he knows, you mean he knows that it's a Suffolk?
I know that he's definitely a Mamzer. He doesn't have any idea.
There's no
Lifnei Iver. Right? That's the Chiddush of Rabbi Chana based on this Ran, Rabbi Ruckheimer.
The person who sort of knows,
right,
should he encourage the Suffolk Mamzer to marry a Suffolk Mamzeret?
So a Suffolk Mamzer is not allowed to marry a Suffolk Mamzeres either, because maybe one of them is really a Mamzer and the other one's not. So better to stay out of it, yeah.
How does this view match up with the Evan Ezer, who says the way you do know, you're supposed to go to one of the Snu'in to tell them?
Good. So that's a case where that may not be a Suffolk. Maybe that's a Vadei Mamzer, but other people don't know about it.
This person actually
right?
does know, he's
right?
not obligated to reveal it. In our
current right,
case,
correct.
That he actually does know.
And right.
That's the case of the Ibn Ezer, who says when you really do know,
right,
you should tell somebody. the second and third line.
Right. So there is a broader machlokas here whether these two how these two concepts relate. Meaning, is mishpacha shenima nitma a manifestation of suffik mamzer, or is it a different calculus and there are different criterion for what's considered a suffik mamzer and where we say kemen shenima nitma? So you have to figure out. So Rabbi Chanan seems to be taking one stance over there, that these two issues are not at all related, but they may. They may be related according to others, so we have to work on that. Yeah.
So the mice, if someone, let's say, is doing shidduchim,
right?
They shouldn't delve into this area, right?
Well, that's what we're going to try to address. That depends on how far back is this, and is this something that's readily going to come out? And if you have evidence to something, if you have documentary evidence that's going to come out, that's out there in the open, that could be a totally different calculus. Yeah.
What's the purpose of revealing the shidduchim?
Yeah, so in that context, it sounds like we're talking about where this person, some people know that this is definitely the case. So whether, again, kemish and imanim is a kind of amorphous concept in terms of its application. So you'd have to work out the nuances of the shita to figure out where this all fits in. It's hard to paint a clear picture. Definitely a regalachas. Yeah.
But just because Rav Chanan's shita is commonly accepted.
So again, Rav Chanan's position is a theoretical analysis. It has limited practical ramifications because it's almost impossible to conceive of a case where I have definitive knowledge and I know for sure that no one else is going to have access to that knowledge. It's of limited practical relevance. Okay, let's move on a little bit because we do have some ground to cover. Okay, take a look. Take a look at source number 6. Eishes Ish, source number 6. Shulchan Aruch Evan Ezer Siman Dalitz Iftesvav. Eishes Ish, Sheyatza Lehakol, Shehaisa Mizana Tachas Baila. You have a married woman, and there's a kol, there's a murmur out there that she's Mizana. You know, she's ostensibly living happily with her husband, as far as anyone else knows. But people are talking that she's being mizana outside of the marriage. Everyone's talking. Even though everyone's talking, but we're not concerned about the status of the children. There's a principle, the Gemara in Sota, the Rambam quotes this in Parakafi Siribiya. That rov ilos eitzol habal. That if a woman's married, even if we know we have information that she's having an affair with someone else, but in terms of the status of her children, you have the right to assume that her husband is the biological father of the children because of this rov. That the majority of situations are such that a woman has children with her husband and not with someone else. Okay, that's point one. That will be relevant in certain situations, which we're going to expand on in a moment. Again, that's talking about a married woman living still with her husband, but there are rumors that she's having an affair with someone else. Take a look at source number 7. Rambam Yisuri Bia Perek Tesvav Halacha Yates Yisuri Bia Tesvav Yates Eishes Ish Haisa Muberes. So a married woman is pregnant. The Umrah, and she says, Uberze Einom Bibayli. She says that the father is not my husband. Einon Emenus Apostle. We don't believe her. She has no Nemanus. Vareya Ben. Einon Demesa Masva Russia. And she has no Nemanus to compromise anyone else's status. She can talk about herself, but she has no Nemanus to compromise someone else's status. Is that correct? Vareya Ben Mecheskas Kashrus. The father has special nemanus called Yakir. The father's nemanus Yakir because of the halachas of Yerusha, Kies ben Abuchor Yakir. So the father's believed to say, this is my son, so he can be Yorishmi, or this is not my son. So that's a special nemanus accorded to the father. So Amr Ha'av Eino Bini, Osha Haya Baila Bimdina Sayam, Hareza Becheskas Mamzer. So if the father says, her husband says, this is my son, so then, that we have to take into consideration, because he has nemanus about who is his child. Or, if he's nowhere to be found, she's officially married, but the husband's been away on business for a year, and never came back, then the kid is becheskas mamzer. Okay. Just 1 second. One more source. We'll take questions. Look at source number 8. This I was quoting Shulchan Aruch. Siman Tes, Siman Kaf Tes. Reading the third line, quotes what we just saw in the Rambam. Third line from the Ramah. Avala Av Sha'omer al Uber. She'eino mimenu. Sorry, the Chaber. Av Sha'omer al Uber. She'eino mimenu. Oh, al Echem mibanu. She'eino beno. Naman leposel v'hu mamzer bad. If a father says, this unborn child, or this born child, is not my son, so that's the nemanus of Yakir. He's believed to say that this is not his son and create a mamzer effectively. Yeah.
This special nemanus that's according to the father applies even today, where it could be the wife comes into the marriage with the resources and asks for the prenup. So she might have resources that she doesn't want to.
No, that's a function. That's a function of how Yerusha works. That the Yerusha goes to the father's sons. That's a function of the biblical laws of Yerusha. Okay. So. The two things we've seen, yeah?
How does DNA play into this?
How does DNA play into this? Okay, so the...
You could have had a black baby, a white father,
right.
A white mother,
good.
A white baby.
Good, okay.
You have to go to DNA.
Good. So,
No.
Okay, so I... Right.
That's the cause.
So I'll 30 seconds about DNA. If you were to get a DNA test, it would create potentially major problems. But we don't advise it. Because you don't have to... That's the kind of investigation that there's no obligation to do. If you got the results, it could be bad news. But we would never tell anyone to go that route.
Why?
Now,
why?
Because...
The father doesn't need it, and the mother creates problems.
Because our... The orientation is not to create mamzeres, it's to help people. And if you have information that isn't something in front of your nose, then very readily available, you don't have to go investigating. That's part of the notion of kevin shenitma nitma, in a sense, not necessarily exactly, but the notion that we're not looking to pose problems. Now, so what we've seen so far are two things. In the context of a woman who is ostensibly happily married, or she's at least still living with her husband, and there are rumors of extramarital relationships, number one, there's a notion that ro bilas e solabal, you have the right to assume that the father is the husband and not the other guy because of this rove. And number two, even if a woman says Tamale, that the other guy's a father, we don't believe her. Okay.
Why would you not believe her if she's making a kid a mamzer?
Because she has no nemah, just apostle someone else. She has no believability.
She's making herself the kid a mamzer.
So she may make herself a zona. By saying that, she's not going to be a suur l'kohen, that's what it says here in Shulchan Aruch, but she has no believability to affect the status of anyone else.
Does she make an offer to her husband too?
I'm sorry?
So
that depends on whether the husband believes her. That's a notion that we discussed last time of Shavi and Avshei Chaticha Disura, that strictly speaking, she has no nemadus. But if the husband believes her and sees she's telling the truth, so then, because of Shavi Nafshe, because he accepts upon himself that status, then he's going to be a surator. Okay.
But still not begam to the child.
So this is all talking about a case of a married woman still living with her husband. What happens in the more common case, where you have a woman that was married with a proper halachic marriage? That's what we discussed last week. The woman is married to the proper halachic marriage, there's no way to question the marriage. If it wasn't a halachic marriage, so she's not halachically married, fine, she's halachically married. She separates from her husband, she has a civil divorce. They're not living together for years. And now she goes civilly remarries another Jewish husband. So in that kind of a case, you're still going to say, does any of this apply? Will be, let's say, it's all about that. So let's analyze that a little bit. So take a look. Take a look now. At source number 12. Evan Ezra Simon Dalit Seif Kavav. Evan Ezra Simon Dalit Seif Kavav. Pinuya shenis abra v'yalda. You have a single woman who becomes pregnant, has a baby. Im ena lefaneid lebodka oshi yishoto ilemes. If we can't ask her the questions, afil im omeres tel ploni hu v'onamakir b'osa ploni shu mamzer. Even if she claims that the father is so-and-so and he's a mamzer, ein zavlad el safek. So she's not believed to say that the kid's a mamzer. At worst, it's a safek. Afilu imoda oso ploni shenivalolo, even if the other guy agrees that they had a relationship. Shekishem shezinza imzeh kafzim samacher. Why? Because all we know is that this woman had a relationship with one guy in a znus context. So the fact that she was mizan with one guy, she could have been mizan with other people also.
Why would it make the kid a mamzer if he's married? You said through the panuya.
No, here the concern is the father's a mamzer. The father's a mamzer. The kid's a mamzer. She's saying the father's a mamzer, so we don't believe her. At worst, it's a safek. And why don't we believe her? Because even if we know for a fact that she had a relationship with this mamzer, she had a relationship with other people too.
And the
acher
is
the acher could be a kosher, right? Now, in the context of the penuya, the single woman, the acher would be a kosher. But maybe this is relevant in the context of our case also. You have a married woman. You had a married woman who had a halachic marriage, civilly divorced from her husband. Now she's living with someone else. So that's not a halachically sanctioned relationship. So maybe she had a relationship with this guy. Maybe she had relations with other people also. Maybe she had relations with non-Jews.
But wouldn't you apply the rule of the rove?
So what's the rove? So how do we analyze the rove? Rove bilas eitz lo baal. That's not the baal. That's
the current baal.
That's not halachic baal. So is that halachic baal? Okay, so this can cut in different directions. Good. So what you're alluding to, the position of the Radvaz, Chele Bey, Simin Tav Kuf Kavav. How do you extend this notion of kishem shizim zemzeh kach zimsa im acher? Or there's a parallel corollary that there's another halachic concept that some of the contemporary achronim throw into the mix, contemporary poskim in this kind of a situation as well. The Gemara, I don't have this on the Mar Makomos, but the Gemara in Ksubis on Daf Tesvav has a notion of Trey Ruby, double rove. What's the context there? There we're talking about a woman who was taken captive. Sorry, a woman who may have been taken captive, maybe a shvuya is going to be a suah lekohen. But if you have a double rove, what's a double rove? She's in a situation where the majority of the population is Jewish, and the majority of the caravan passing through, Rove Ir and Rove Sia, the majority of that city's population, the majority of the caravan passing through are all Jewish. So even though in a vacuum we would have been concerned that maybe she was violated by a non-Jew, but if the Rove of the people in that environment, the double Rove, are Jewish, then she is still Mutaris Lekohen. So some Rav Avadia is the more extreme formulation of this. Rav Avadia in a number of Jewis has the notion that at least in certain circumstances you can throw this into the mix. In our kind of a situation, you have a woman who had been halachically married, now she's civilly divorced and married to another husband, but that's not a halachically sanctioned wedding, and she's not living in Bnei Brak or Tel Aviv or Shalim, she's living in New York or anywhere in Chutz Laaretz essentially. So the majority of the population there is non-Jewish. The majority of the local population of that street, that neighborhood, however you want to define it, is not Jewish. So maybe you can rely there on the Trey Ruby, that the majority of people that she could have had a relationship with are non-Jewish. And Rav Avadia works with this in a number of Jewis. Now, there is a qualification to that, which Rav Avadia wasn't necessarily so concerned about, but there is a Radvaz. The Radvaz says you can only have this notion of kishem shizim zem zek hafzim samacher, that maybe she had relationships with other men also, where it's daima minei umi'alma, where she is known to be involved with one guy and with other guys also. But if she has a relationship exclusively with one guy, even if it's not in a marital context, so then it's not really reasonable to say, well, maybe she was involved with other men also. You know, she's living she's civilly married to this other person, so you don't have the right to assume that maybe she was living with other people as well in that context. So these two notions of Keshen Shezinsev Zeh Kapsin Samacher, or Rob Ilos Eitzel, sorry, or Trey Ruby, are potentially very helpful in these kinds of situations in Chutzar. So Rav Avadia was Mekel here to the extreme. We'll see another cool of Rav Avadia in a moment as well. As Rabbi Tzvi Ben Yaakov, one of the senior Dayanim in Tel Aviv, told me once, according to Rav Avadia, you basically can't have a case of Mamzeris in Chutzlaris, because you'll always have a Rov Yir and Rov Siyah of Nachrim. But let's limit that a little bit. Take a look at source number 13. Rav Avadia writes, Yabi Omer Chelag Yud, Evan Ezer Simen Vav. Chelag Yud, Evan Ezer Simen Vav. Mida afker anafsha b'isser eishes ish lihinasei ezrachis liishzar lilo kabalasket. The fact that a woman who had been halachically married and now is civilly married to another guy without receiving a get from her first husband, so that indicates a certain orientation to znus. Even though we could say, well, in the mind of civil society, she's married in a proper way, but in the mind of halacha, she's not. So once that's the case, so you could say, Kishem Shizinsam Zakasin Zamakir, if she's not living in a halachically sanctioned relationship, so then her orientation is thus. So she could just as well be living with other non Jews at the same time. Ubifrat Shisham Rov Hatoshavim Goyim Tlina Barub Dalm, especially even without Trey Ruby, even if with only one Rov, the majority of the people in that area are non Jewish. So you can rely on that. Take a look at Rav Yashiv. Kovitz Shubas Chelik Aleph. We'll skip to source number 15. Simon Kuf Mem Gimel. Amnon Zepashit. Source number 15. Bottom of page 6. Shema Safek Haya Achrei Shenisu Afilim Nisu Nezrachiyim. No. Rav Yashiv says that if the doubt of status was raised after there's a marriage, even if it's a civil marriage, Yesh Lira says of Vlad Kibino Midin Robila say Silval. No. So you can't say Kishem Shizinsam Zeh Kasin Samacher if the woman is civilly married. In her mind, she's married, she has a exclusive relationship with the new husband, even if in the eyes of Halacha she's still married to the first fellow. But if in her mind she's practically married to the second husband, you can't say that Kishem Shizinsam Zeh Kasin Samacher, we view that as Nus, and that she's going to have relationships freely. So Yesh Lira says of Vlad Kibino Midin Robi Lo Seitzel Acher Bal. That's exactly what you were saying, that in that situation where she's civilly married to the second husband, the Robi Lo Seitzel Bal was that you have to assume that the father is the second husband. Mikri Begida Im Tizna Alav. Even in secular society, there is a notion of adultery. At least there used to be. Then he says, Ach Yesh Lomar, Dibofen Sha'anshi Amakam Yodim Shaisen Suli Ish. But if everyone knows that she used to be married to the first husband, the Ozvo Sol Lilo Kabbalah Sket, and she left him without a get, and then she went to live with someone else, so maybe you don't have that chazaka there. But if in the common perception, if in the public perception she's viewed as being unfaithful to the first husband, so then maybe you won't say Rov Ilos Acher the second vow. Rav Avadia, one second, Rav Avadia has a phenomenal kula, even here, based on the Hafla. Hafla was the Baal Hafla, Pinchas Horowitz, Rav in Frankfurt, the Hasidish Rav in Frankfurt, after the Kliva Get, so we can't tell, no time for stories now. So he has a comment in his Sefer Al Torah, Panim Yafos Parshas Amor. And Rav Shechter quotes the Panim Yafos, so he points out that the Sefer was published by the children, the descendants of the Baal HaFla, who themselves were misnagdim. So they wanted to excise any reference to Chassidus in the Sefer. So whenever he quotes the Maggid, messages from Maggid, so they take out the word of Maggid. But they didn't do a good editing job, so sometimes he quotes the Maggid Mishnah, and they took out the word Maggid also. So the Panim Yafos has the following line, which no one else, I don't think anyone else said before, but Rav Avadia takes this and runs. Venera, the Hadar Mina Robilos Halacha Chabal, Eina Perush Mimdesha Baila Ragilat Slab Bias Harbi Yasamechem. Robilos Eisabal doesn't mean that statistically the majority of Bios that this woman has is with her husband as opposed to someone else. Because after all, Robilus Eisabal applies even if they were only together once, even if you're analyzing it the second day that they're married. There's no distinction between, we're not counting up the length of the relationship. The majority of women who have relationships have those relationships with their husbands. Not that this woman's majority of relationships are with her husband, but the majority, Ruba Delesa Kaman, in the world. Ruba Delesa Kaman of all the women in the world are Nivalos Mibalein. Lachain. So if a woman has a relationship with Chai Vekrisos, with someone she's not allowed to marry, she's a married woman, she has a relationship with another guy, Kedushin's not Chal, less Lai Ruba. So you can't say this Rov, of Rov Bilas Eitzel, the illegal illicit Baal. The Adaraba, Yesh Litlos Jenis Abra Me'acherim, Shein Behem Isser Kares. So more likely to assume that she's nivela from that who is not in Isser Kares. So Rav Avadia says, even if a woman is halachically married, at least it's a sniff. A woman is halachically married, she gets civilly divorced, married to another guy civilly. Not just that we don't say Robilos Acher the second Baal, but we still say Robilos Eitzel the first halachic Baal. That she's not living with, because that's the halachic principle. Rav Avadia goes with this, Chela Tessim and Vav, he passes based on the Safla, it's a phenomenal Kula, it's a sniff, not with other considerations as well, that's a phenomenal Kula. But this kind of cuts, this is the most extreme example of something that really colors these kinds of issues as they come up. How do we deal with halakhic principles that may mask empirical reality? We have a situation where it's clear to us, let's say, we'll use this extreme example. It's relevant to Trey Ruby, it's relevant to Rov, Shem, Jezin, Zemzeh, Kassin, Zemacher. We know what the facts are, right? There's no real doubt in any of our minds that the child is a product of the second marriage. But we could do halachic gymnastics and come up with a halachically cogent argument based on halachic principles that the kid is not a mamzer. So Rav Avadia's orientation in these things is to go with the halachic principles. Rav Asher Weiss, who I've spoken to about these kinds of issues a number of times, when Rav Avadia was alive, we had some of these complicated mamzerus cases that we weren't prepared to paskin internally. So I developed a relationship with one of his grandchildren, Rabbi Avadia Yosef Toledano, as around my age, prolific author. He sits under Rav Asher Weiss's bezdin, among other things. He's written like 10 svarim by now, phenomenal. So he would work on some of these cases and write very lengthy shuvas, and then give it to his grandfather to sign off on with a few lines with his haskama. So we have, if you look at his shuvas, there are a number of cases that we dealt with where we corresponded about. But Rav Asher actually has a shuva, Chela Gimel Men Chas Asher, where he explains how this hafla is not really mainstream, but his orientation in many things also is more towards the halachic principles over empirical reality. Rav Shachter's orientation is more towards empirical reality over halachic principles. So, Lamashal, drinking milk nowadays, so Rav Shachter hasn't had commercially sold milk for many years, because statistically, you don't have shishim against the number of trefos that are mixed together in the milk. But there are halachic principles of Rove that would tell you that doesn't concern us. So Rav Asher has a tshuva about milk in which he takes the one position, or Shechter takes the other position. There's a lot of issues that kind of hinge on this question. I was talking to Rav Asher about a Mamzeris case in the last year. He said he had suggested to someone who was very good at research that it would be kedai to try to get together all the marmakamas on this matter to come up with a study, and how do we deal with tensions between halakhic principles and empirical reality. But let's go back to the issues at hand, as we are running out of time. Some of what we need to deal with in these kinds of situations is what kind of evidence is necessary and sufficient to pose a problem. When do we go looking for evidence? So Rav Moshe has a couple of tshuvos. We'll just, since time is short, we'll note one. Take a look at source number 9. Evan Ezer, Chela Gimel, Simen Hay. So here the story was that there was a woman who self-represented that she was married b'chup of the Kiddushin before the war in Europe, and then she fled to South America immediately after the wedding, and then she married someone else. And the representation is that if she was really married to the first husband, the child from the second union would be a mamzer. Moshe says she has no nemanus, she has no believability to claim that she had been married first, absent any documentation. And even though there's a civil record of the marriage, we know that many people recorded marriages for immigration purposes, either to be married, not to be married, and this is during the war years, and there would have been motivation to be recorded as married, possibly, even if she wasn't married. So there's no edus from any reliable source that this woman was married. But Rav Moshe does entertain, in a different tshuva, that if documentary evidence is readily available, so maybe you have to look for that, and you can't ignore it. So if the whole representation that there was a first marriage is based on Krovin, based on Psulin, based on relatives, based on people who are possible edus, you don't have to believe what they say. So we were dealing with a case in the last year of a fellow, a Baal Tshuva, who came from one of the former Soviet republics after the fall of the Iron Curtain. And apparently there was some understanding in the family that they had the following situation. The grandmother, the father's mother, had been married before the war in one of the former Soviet republics, before it was the Soviet Republic, before the war. And then the war came. She got separated from her husband. She assumed her husband had been dead. She remarried after the war. And then a couple years later, Bahari Baraglov, the first husband, reappeared. So if that's all we know, so no one's believed to say anything. We have no documentary evidence. It's all self-representation of Krovim, Epsul, and people have no Nemanis. And no one's going to find out there's no one alive anymore who was there then who could testify that there actually was a first wedding. However, and we had a case like that. It was once doing a get of the Bezdin, an Israeli woman, and her mother was with her, and she was just, the mother was telling stories about Mesiach Lefituma, not understanding the ramifications. That, you know, my mother had been married before the war, and she assumed that her husband had died, and then she remarried my father, and then she found out that he was still alive, and she had no idea what the ramifications of what she was saying was. So I called, I was sitting there with, I wasn't in the room at the time, I was sitting there with one of the representatives of the Bez and Eretz Yisrael, who came running out to me and said, "Do you believe what she just told me?" Well, she just told me this. So I called Rabbi Willig on the spot, and he said, don't ask anything further. It's so far removed that there's no way that anyone is around anywhere to say, ain't this about the fact that there was a wedding? We have no evidence, so forget about it. But the problem was, in the case that we were dealing with, it wasn't just a self-representation. There was also a newspaper article, an obituary, for the first husband who had survived the war and reappeared. After he passed away, there's an obituary telling this whole story about the fact that he had been married before the war to this woman. All the information was there. And then they rediscovered each other, and they went their separate ways and never had contact again afterwards. So now we have a newspaper article.
Is that proof?
Good. So is that proof also? So there. So the newspaper article also is based on the same people, right? It's not. So maybe there's a call. Maybe somehow there's people know about this in the street that creates a certain halachic status. Or no, that this is the information. How did the obituary writer get his information from the family, or well, Krovim Psulim anyway? By the way, I discovered there's no Hebrew word for obituary. I was talking, I visited Rashi Weiss to discuss this. I was sitting with his Bezdin, so he's an English speaker, but everyone else spoke Hebrew, so I was talking Hebrew. And then I was going to say obituary, I didn't know what the word was. Apparently,
there's an Aramaic word, it's called guzma.
So there was enough information here, at least anecdotally, that the feeling was, although you could debate this, the feeling was that if there are readily available records of this marriage, you at least have to look for the records. So we contacted the archivist in that community who dug up speculatively, before knowing anything, even if the facts were true, we could well have assumed that the first marriage maybe wasn't a halachic marriage anyway. This is before the war, in a community where the influence of Haskalah was rampant, and the observant population was not the majority of the population. So you could well assume, or maybe have the right to assume, that it wasn't a halachically valid marriage to begin with anyway, even though the family seemed to have been traditional, and after the war they insisted on having a bris milah for the kids, even though they were under Soviet rule and it was dangerous to do so. Okay. So, but the feeling was to look at the archive. So we contacted the archivist, and they came up. They found the passport of this grandmother that was stamped on the back with the stamp of the local rabbi from one of the communities there, attesting to the fact that this couple was married on such and such a date. So Rav Avadya, by the way, has another fascinating kula, in which he writes that even if you have a marriage registration document signed by an Orthodox rabbi, that has no ne'emanus because it's eid echad. And you only have, you don't have a ksuba, you just have a marriage registration form signed by an Orthodox rabbi, so that also doesn't approve. This is in Isurim, this is Darvish Sheba Erva. So that's a big chiddush. So ultimately, Rav Asher felt, and then we got Rav Zalman Nechemi to sign on to the Pesach as well, among other considerations, or various, in any of these considerations, there are various ingredients that go into the mix, and various Sirufim, but Rav Asher felt that even that document isn't necessarily conclusive, because it doesn't say explicitly that this rabbi, even though it was an Orthodox rabbi, was Masada Kedushin, he signed that they got married. Maybe they needed that document to escape wherever they were escaping to. So, again, absent any concrete information that there was a first wedding, and for all we know, maybe there was a get that we don't know about, since basically the yisod is that absent any absolutely firm evidence where no one's around anymore to say, hey, this is about what happened, there's what to rely on under the circumstances that the kid is not a mamzer, you know, to be choshesh, and he can marry freely. So most of the situations that we deal with, there are complicated ones that require a lot of analysis and careful deliberation, but most of these situations there is a path out, either based on considerations about the wedding, based on considerations of lack of evidence. Rav Moshe has a famous tshuva that if you can't create mamzerus through IVF or through artificial reproductive means. We had a case like that once where we discovered that the child in question was actually conceived through IVF. So according to Rav Moshe, that wouldn't create mamzerus either. So usually there are enough considerations at the end of the day where there's what to be made about, but these are very serious cases that need to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. And they do create challenges to navigate through. Okay, it was a pleasure to spend the last 2 weeks with you. Hope you gained something, I gained a lot, and hope you'll invite me back at some point.